Okay, I was asked today, I was asked to give a Gemara class. So we're going to try to do a classic piece of Talmud from the Babylonian Talmud, using the classic analytical techniques of the Talmud. And we'll try to do it in such a way that even if you are not fluent in Aramaic, your Akkadian grammar is not ideal, and you have had no experience in Gemara, hopefully you'll be able to understand it. So let's try to work with that. The section we're dealing with is a section of the Babylonian Talmud known as Tractate Kiddushin. Now, Kiddushin, from the word kadosh, which means holy, Kiddushin means marriage. The act of marriage in Judaism actually is divided into two sections. The first part of marriage is called Kiddushin, and the second part is called Nisuin. What is the difference? Kiddushin is done in one of three ways. Kesef, which is by transferal of something of value to the bride, which we usually use a ring. Give her a ring and say, Hareyat mekudeshet li, behold, you are betrothed to me, betaba'at zu, with this ring, kedat moshevi Yisrael, according to the law of Moses and Israel. Or you could give her a document which says the same thing. Or if they cohabit, that is also considered kiddushin. Although that is not done, as it is considered an immodest way of becoming married. So that is what's called kiddushin, which is giving something of value, kesef, money, a ring, shtar, or a document, and saying, you are betrothed to me with this ring according to the law of Moses and Israel. Okay, that's called kiddushin. Now, when the couple does kiddushin, they are 100% married, and if they want to break up, they need an actual divorce, and it's adultery if there's any illicit relationships. However, they are not allowed to live together as yet. That requires the second stage of marriage, which is called nisuin. What does nisuin involve? Anyone know? What is nisuin? The chuppah. Correct. The husband or the groom symbolically, or actually realistically, brings the bride into his house. So we set up a symbolic house with a roof, which is owned by the chatan, by the groom, and that symbolic house we call the chuppah. Okay, we also actually have an actual house, and generally the chatan hires a room in the wedding hall called the cheder yichud, in which the bride and groom are alone together after the wedding. That's an intimacy which is only reserved for married couples, to be alone together in a locked room. And since he also has rented the room, it's like his house as well, so they're alone together in the house. So that's what we call, and in addition to that, there's another thing we do under the chuppah, which is, what else do we do under the chuppah? We say sheva brachot, we say special blessings, various blessings about the wedding, which are said under the chuppah, which is known as, that's part of the nisuin ceremony. After which the chatan breaks a glass. What's the reason for that? Yes, that's correct. To commemorate the destruction of the temple. It says, if I forget thee, O Jerusalem, and my right hand forget its cunning. Some say also it's the last opportunity the chatan gets to put his foot down. But that's actually the correct interpretation is, as you said, Churban HaBayit, the destruction of the temple. Now, so that's what we call Kiddushin. And is this clear, the two parts of the ceremony? Okay. Now, in the times of the Talmud, there was generally a year in between Kiddushin and Nisuin. There's a year. So you would have Kiddushin, and you'd be married. But you wouldn't be living together until a year later. In which case, you have a year to prepare for the wedding, so that the groom, as Maimonides says, is meant during that time to accumulate. He says only a fool gets married without having enough money for a house and to support a family. So, unfortunately, I'd say classify about 75% of people today as fools. But he says it gets married only with that. And it's time to prepare themselves for the wedding. She prepares herself, he prepares himself. And then after a year, they have the chuppah. How long do we have today, nowadays, between Kiddushin and Nisuin, the two stages of marriage? Anyone know? About 3 minutes. That would be correct, right? They said 5, okay, also possible. Depends on the chazan. It could be 10, you know, you never, right? So, um, So we haven't, right under the hooper, that probably is because the amount of trust we place in people to be married and not living together for a year is like, you know, so 5 minutes in public is probably enough time we can trust people. But anyway, so that's Kiddushin Yisrael. Now, this tractate and this particular mission we're going to deal with is speaking exclusively about Kiddushin, that first part of the ceremony, Kiddushin. Now, the Mishnah says the following. Those who know Hebrew, you can look there. I'm sorry for the spelling error. Right, those who know Hebrew, look there. Those who don't know Hebrew, look at the very first thing where it says, under Mishnah, it says the Mishnah in English. Ha'ish mekadesh bo ubishlucho. What that means is, a man may betroth either himself, that means he personally gives her the ring and says the words, or bishlucho. What's bishlucho? Through his agent, his proxy. You know, it could be that he cannot make it to the wedding. Look, you know, I'm busy. Right? I've got my personal trainer at the gym, is at that time. I have more important things to do. So he tells his wife, right, it's a great start to a wedding. He says, look, you know, my lawyer's going to be turning up there. Right? So the lawyer comes and he says to the woman, Harayat mikudeshet, behold, you are betrothed, la klient shili, la lakuah shili, to my client, right, Joe Blow, right, with this ring, according to the law of Moses in Israel. And she says, oh, thank you, right, and they're married. Not the lawyer and her, right, but her and the client are now married. Now, it also says, Ha'isha mikudeshet ba ubishlucha. The woman can get married either by personally being there and accepting the ring, or by sending her agent. Doesn't have to be a lawyer, right? Sending her agent to the wedding. So you could have a situation. You got these two lawyers, they're sitting at the table. One opens his briefcase, takes out a ring, gives to the other guy who said, your client is betrothed to my client with this ring, according to law, this witnesses, it has to be witnesses, by the way, right? Jewish law has to be witnesses. According to the law of Moses in Israel, with this ring, right, and he gives it to the other lawyer. The other lawyer says, I hereby accept this, you know, for my client. And the two clients are married. And if they want to split up now, they need a divorce. And if there's adultery, it's adultery. So it's actually a real marriage. Now, there are very few cases where this actually happens. I do know of one case. Before Glasnost in the Soviet Union, former Soviet Union, pre-Glasnost, in order for a Jew to get out of the country, to get a visa to get out, was only done according to the law of reunification of families. You have to prove that you're related to someone outside of Russia, then you can get out. You guys are familiar with that probably, Jackson Amendment, etc. So there was an engaged couple, Jewish couple in Russia, and the man got an exit visa to go to the States. They decided, they'd been refused NICS for a long time, he decided since he got the exit visa, he should leave, and they would try to do something about her getting out. So what he decided to do was, he went to a rabbi in the States. And the rabbi said, look, appoint an agent, a shliach, and there's an American Jew who's going to go to Russia. This American Jew is pointed in front of witnesses as his agent. He goes to the Soviet Union. He says to this woman, you are betrothed to my, you know, to the guy who sent me, right, with this ring, according to the law of Moses in Israel. And they are betrothed, 100% betrothed now. And now, since the rabbi in America is an authorized marriage celebrant by American law, he can issue a marriage certificate. And the marriage certificate means that American law recognizes, that Jewish law recognizes that these two people are married. Then she goes with the American marriage certificate to the Soviet Union government, to the government, and says, I want to get out, my husband's in the States. And they say, and they do. She got out. And they lived happily ever after. I don't know, maybe not. But I mean, she got out at least. Right? You know, Groucho Marx said, that he was happily married for 2 years, for 2 years. Unfortunately, he's been married for 22 years. Right? But in any case, he says, I've had the love of a wonderful woman for 25 years. Unfortunately, my wife just recently found out. So anyway, but the idea is, though, that these two people are now married by proxy, by shliach, by an agent, and they are married. So now that's what the Mishnah is telling us. The Mishnah is telling us, informing us of an important idea, that it is possible to do the act of Kiddushin, the initial act of marriage, through an agent. Okay? Is this clear so far? Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, what I would like to do now is, yes?
This contract, I mean, you specify who the person is, and so on and so forth. I mean, you know, like when Yaakov married Leah, and so on, I mean, you know, it's, you know,
We specify, unfortunately, things can happen. You know, like, there were actually a couple of cases, historically, where a man appointed an agent to marry a woman for him. The agent took a liking to her and married her himself. And there are quite a few court cases about this. There's one mentioned in the Talmud. And there's a couple of mentioned in responsa literature throughout history of agents doing this. You know, so it's a little bit of a risk. A little bit of a risk. Okay, so in any case, yeah.
You have the two lawyers. Do they have
dinner
and a chuppah?
No. Chuppah is nisuin. Remember we mentioned that's a totally different thing. Chuppah has nothing to do with kiddushin. What we're talking about is kiddushin, not chuppah. Okay? These lawyers can meet in the office, in the conference room. They can meet at a bar. It doesn't make a difference where they meet, right? And he can marry the other. It's fine.
So
now.
You better send a woman as your agent.
No. Doesn't have to be a woman. Oh, I see, yes. Well, okay, that's probably a good idea. Yeah, probably good. Right. Or someone who's already married or whatever. Yeah. Anyway, but that's not the point. Ktuvah actually is more correct, but it's commonly called ktuvah. Right, but the ktuvah, which is the marriage contract, is independent of both kiddushin and nisuin. The ktuvah is a rabbinic decree. Some authorities say it's biblical, but it's a rabbinic decree to ensure that he does not just divorce her without any type of penalty. He must pay support. He must pay, if he predeceases her, his estate must pay her. The ketubah also delineates the obligations of the husband to the wife in the marriage. And that's really an additional aspect. It doesn't make them married, but they have to have it to be married. Okay?
So the ketubah. It
is generally signed before the kiddushin, actually. Sometimes it's signed right afterwards. Usually it's very often signed beforehand. It's a marriage contract. Now, it's in Aramaic, and most men who read it don't know what they're signing, which is not a good thing. It's not a good thing. They sign it, and there's witnesses anyway, so it's too bad for you, right? But it does delineate the obligations of the man towards his wife in the marriage contract, and they must have a marriage contract. But, again, the marriage contract is not the thing that affects, that creates the marriage. Okay. So now, we have the rule. The rule is, and the Mishnah is telling us what we call a chidush. What's chidush mean? Something new, a novele, something novel. Okay. Now, which is that you can get married through a proxy. You can appoint an agent. What else do we do through proxy in modern day societies? Stocks. Buying and selling stocks. We always do. I mean, very rare you do it yourself. You have a proxy. What else do we do through proxy? Voting very often. Voting can be done through a proxy vote. You can have someone else vote for you at a corporation, at a meeting, at the country club, whatever it happens to be. So we do use proxies in other areas. You can give a power of attorney to someone in secular law, in civil law. That's what we call a shliach in Hebrew. Although in Hebrew you don't need a contract. In Jewish law you don't need a contract. So now, the Mishnah is telling us you can marry someone using an agent. Now, I'd like to ask you to look linguistically. What is the problem with this Mishnah? There's a problem linguistically with this Mishnah. What is the problem with the Mishnah? Mikadesh or Mikadeshet? Right, Mikadesh, you can't say it's a Daladat. But Mikadesh, it does say this. It says the man marries, the woman is married. One's active, one's passive. The reason for that is because that just reflects the reality, which is the man gives the ring, she accepts it. So he does the action and she accepts, therefore the expression is done in passive verb to indicate what she does and active verb to indicate what he does. That's why there's a difference between the man and the woman. But there's another problem in the Mishnah. I want you like you to look at the Mishnah, just those first two lines, a man may be betrothed, and tell me what's the problem here? What's the problem? We always look for problems when we study Gemara. We look at a Mishnah, you have to find a good question. Finding the good question is the key to the answer. Nothing's more irrelevant than the answer to a question that you never asked. If I walk into the room and I say, 3.8, you say, what the heck? I said, 3.8 is the solution to the equation. I said, oh, what equation? Right? It's irrelevant. So you've got to have the good question before we give you the answer. What's the question? What's the problem here? You're going to force me to have to tell you. Well, that's understood. I mean, that's clear. It has to be. Who are they getting married to? I mean, nowadays, I suppose you could have a doubt about it. But I mean, through most of history, a man was to a woman, a woman to a man, and that was it. Right. Was not to a Barbary ape or someone of the same gender or anything like that. Right. So the question is this. A man may betrothed by himself. Is that a chidush? Is that something novel? You can get married personally? Is that novel? Of course not. That's what we call pshita. Obvious. What does the Mishnah have to tell me that you can get married yourself or she can get married herself? It's obvious. It's not obvious that you can get married through a proxy. That's something not obvious at all. It is obvious you can get married yourself. What would you think? You only can get married through a lawyer. You can only get married through a proxy. Why does it have to use this term, bo, himself, or ba, herself? Why does it have to say himself or herself? It's unnecessary. It's extraneous. It's tautology. It's extra. It's obvious, as all those words were, right? So why does it have to say that? You understand the question? The question has to be understood before we get to the answer. The Mishnah is supposed to be concise, compact, and laconic. It is supposed to only tell me the absolute minimum information that I need. The rest, if I can extrapolate it, that's fine. Extrapolate. So therefore, the Mishnah should only tell me the following. A man may get married through an agent. A woman may get married through an agent. That's it. And of course, I deduce from that of course you can get married yourself. Is what were you saying?
I was going to say that maybe you'd only think that, you can only get married through an agent. Then
why would you think that? Why would you think that you can only get married through an agent? You mean the normal method of marriage would only be through an agent?
No, I don't like that.
Would that make sense?
It
has to make sense. Yeah. That's a possibility. But, see, the problem with that is, and you could not be expected to know this, there's another Mishnah that says that explicitly. So there's another Mishnah that says a woman only gets married if she consents. So therefore, if we have another Mishnah that says what you said, again, this Mishnah is unnecessary. So why does it tell me these words? So the answer, okay, the question is totally clear, correct? So now, the answer is the following. Why does it say you can get married yourself? Because it's stating really this. It's putting the obvious, juxtaposing the obvious with the not obvious. And what does that tell me? Listen carefully. It states the obvious with the not obvious to tell me that there is something not obvious about the obvious. Obviously, yeah. Right, is it clear? It states something which is obvious together with something which is not obvious to teach me that there is something not obvious about the obvious. Okay? Now, what is not obvious about the obvious? So that's what the Gemara, that's now the Gemara comes in, right, which is number one. It says the following. If he can betroth through his agent, is it necessary to state by himself? That's what we call a fortiori reasoning in law. If you can betroth through an agent, of course you can betroth yourself. So I'd like to give you an example of that. Maybe I mentioned this in another class, but a girl came to my house in Toronto. 14-year-old came to the door on a Sunday. Excuse me, sir, would you like a free copy of the Toronto Star? And I said, no, I can't stand the paper. She said, well, would you like to buy a subscription? I said to her, you ever look in your shiva? She said, huh? And I said, look, if I don't want a free copy of the Toronto Star, how much more so do I not want to pay money for a subscription to the stupid paper? Right? So the Gemara is saying, if you can get betrothed through an agent, of course you can betrothed through yourself. Why does it have to say yourself? That's the question. Now the Gemara answers. Rabbi Yosef said, this inclusion intimates that it is more meritorious through himself than through his agent. The Hebrew is mitzvah bo yoter mibishlucho. It is a greater mitzvah to do it yourself than through your agent. It's a great mystery. In other words, even though you are able to do it through an agent, you are able to, it's better to do it yourself. And the Gemara brings examples. Reb Safra used to singe the animal's head of its hair to prepare for cooking on Shabbat. It used to be in Israel, you can still see many places, you go to Machane Yehuda, they sell sheep's heads. In America, that's a neighborhood. But in Israel, it's a dish, right? Sheep's head, right? They sell actual sheep's heads and people eat them. But obviously, to eat a sheep's head, what do you have to do first? You want to get the hair off. You're like a mouth of wool is not like you. Right? So now, they used to have this for Shabbat. Now, Rav Safra was a very great rabbi. He had many servants, he had many students, right? And there would be any number of people willing to help him with this horrible task of singeing the hair off the animal. Why did he could have, so someone could have been his agent to do this. Why did he do it himself? Meritorious, to prepare for Shabbat yourself rather than through an agent. Rabbi used to salt fish to prepare for Shabbat. In other words, it's just giving us examples that even if I can fulfill a mitzvah through an agent, it is always better to do it myself. So now that explains it. Why is the Mishnah telling me himself when it's not necessary to say that? Why is it telling me himself when it's not necessary to say that? What is that hinting to us? That's right. That the self has got to be there. It's better to do it yourself. There's one mitzvah which is an exception to that. It's better not to do it yourself. What's the mitzvah that's better not to do yourself? Tzedakah. Charity. Why? Because charity is better to do anonymously, to retain the dignity of the person that you're giving to retain his anonymity. It's better to do it through an agent. So we give it to a gabbai, tzedakah, someone collecting, or you put it into a box. Right? You don't know who it's going to, they don't know who they're getting it from, that's the ideal. But, in general, with other commandments, certainly better to do it yourself than through an agent. Same is true of marriage. It's better to do it yourself. You're true. I am able to get married through an agent. She is able to get married through an agent, but it's better, the mitzvah, because marriage is actually a mitzvah. Jewish tradition says marriage is a mitzvah. So therefore, it's certainly better to do it yourself than through an agent. That is one answer. But you see, there's a bit of a problem here. What's the problem? That only tells me why it says, how many extra words are there in the Mishnah? How many extra words? How many words are stating the obvious?
One, two.
Two. Himself and herself. They're both obvious. So if I come along and tell you that the obvious word is telling you that it's better to do it yourself, I'm still left with one word that I haven't explained. So now I've got to explain why there's a second extra word in the Mishnah. And that's number two. Some say that in this matter there is actually a prohibition. Not only is it better to get married yourself, but it's prohibited to get married if you are not personally involved. To only do it through a shliach, through an agent, without any personal involvement, is prohibited. Why is that? In accordance with Rav Yehuda's dictum in Rav's name. Rav Yehuda said in the name of Rav, on paragraph 2, a man may not betroth the woman before he sees her, lest he subsequently see something repulsive in her, she becomes loathsome to him, whereas the All-Merciful said, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. Most people are not aware of this, but the mitzvah of Ve'ahavta l'ra'acha kamocha applies even to your spouse. Yes? The obligations of decency, dignity, and respect for humans even applies to spouses, to parents, to children, to relatives. This is a chiddush to many people. I'm just saying, all right. So anyway, but what it's saying is the following. If a man wants to get married to a woman, and he says, I don't want to see her. I don't care what she looks like. I'm appointing an agent. He's going to go and marry her. And it's fine with me. So I'll say, but how do you know? Why are you marrying her? We've corresponded on the internet for many, many years. I feel she is my soulmate. I said, have you ever met her? No. I say, well, what if you don't like the? What if you marry her? And then finally you decide, you know, you don't have any attraction to her. So it'll be a messy, terrible divorce. It's always a tragedy. So you should not do such a thing. He says, believe me, I'm above all that. What do we say to him? What does the rabbi say to him? Liar! He's a liar. Either that or he's sick. One of the two. There has to be attraction. There has to be physical attraction. The man, when he has to see the woman before he gets married, he has to be physically attracted to her. If he's not, he's not allowed to get married. Physical attraction. Right? And it's set, why? So as not to end up with tragedy. So now, they've been corresponding. I actually know someone who, an Australian woman that I know, she lived in New York. And someone suggested a person from London, a man from London, that she would be, that they felt would be a good match for her. And she said, look, I'm not going to London, he's not coming to New York. They said, well, how about if he writes a letter? So he wrote a 5-page letter to her. She said, she answered it back, she had enough self-control that she posted it the next day. He didn't want the date stamp to appear the same day she got it. But she answered back, and they literally became soulmates through correspondence. It wasn't until a couple of months later she went to London and actually met. But supposing they'd corresponded, and he came to his rabbi and said, listen, I don't want anyone else to marry her. Let me immediately appoint an agent, right, to go to New York, and he'll be Mekadesha. Right? The rabbi would say, you're not allowed to. How do you know you're not allowed to? Well, himself, has got to be there. Be there or be shver, as they say in the yeshiva world, right? Right? Be there or be, you know, in other words, he's got to be there. Being, who wrote that? Being here, being there. Baba Ramdas. Baba Ramdas. Baba Ramdas is a Buddhist guru who's Jewish, a Jubu. And, what's they call it, Jubu? Anyway, guys, but I digress. Right, so, as usual. But again, the point is, we now have an idea. We have now two extra words in the Mishnah. The Mishnah tells me two obvious facts: that you can get married yourself, i.e. without an agent. She can get married herself, i.e. without an agent. Okay, so one of those words tells us that it's better to do a mitzvah yourself than through an agent. And one of those tells us that it's prohibited for a man to marry a woman unless he's seen her. But, number three, paragraph three says, what about the woman? Does she have to see him? What if my friend Sally in New York would have said, look, I don't want to see him. And so the rabbi says, well, you know, I don't have to see him, she says. I'm convinced that we're soulmates. But his rabbi says, you've got to see her. So he goes to New York. Someone points her out in the crowd. Okay, he says, fine. And no one points him out in the crowd. She doesn't know. He's even in New York. So he's seen her. She hasn't seen him. So he goes to his rabbi and says, fine, I've seen her. I'm willing to get married through an agent. The rabbi says, fine. She says, I haven't seen him. Can I get married? The rabbi says to her, yeah, fine. Why is it that we allow a woman to get married even though she hasn't seen the man? We will not allow a man to get married if he hasn't seen the woman. Number three. In the case of the woman, however, there is no prohibition. It's better. That's what we said in number one, right? It's better. But there's no prohibition for her to marry without having seen the groom in accordance with Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish said, it is better to live with problems as two than to live alone as a widow. What that means is, it was a common expression that people had at the time. What he means to say is the following. That when a man says that the physical appearance is not the issue for him, it's the soul, it's the relationship, it's the depth. What we say to the man is, he is a liar. With a woman, if she says that, we say, now if she says, no, I've got to see him, 100%. But if she would tell us, I don't have to see him, I'm prepared, I feel that I have found the soulmate here, I feel that we can build a relationship, even though I haven't seen him, we'll trust her on that judgment. So why do we not trust her? We trust her and we don't trust the man. Why is that? So most women would say, because men are intrinsically untrustworthy. But that's not the explanation, right? The explanation is because men tend to, the Talmud says that men tend to function much more based on externals than women. The example would be, there's a guy and a girl in high school and they're walking along holding hands. Now, I would say that only one of them is holding hands. The girl is holding hands, thinking, isn't it nice just to be walking along on a beautiful spring day holding his hand? And the guy is thinking, how do I get the next move? He is not saying, oh, isn't this wonderful just walking along holding hands? Right? Every person, every man here knows that's true, right? That he's not thinking, oh, isn't it just wonderful just to be walking along holding hands? Right? That's not how men operate. Men are animals, basically, right? And the man is thinking, how do I get to the next move from holding the hand on, right? So therefore, the Talmud puts this in a more modest expression than I did. The Talmud, Reish Lakish says, puts it as, it is, you know, Reish Lakish, who says this, is quite a common, Reish Lakish, just as a parenthetically, Reish Lakish was a thief and a highwayman. He was a robber. He was the Ned Kelly of Babylon. You probably never heard of Ned Kelly. But anyway, he was the... What American thieves? There's so many in America. Anyway, it doesn't matter. So, he was a Margaret... You know. So what happens is Rabbi Yochanan, one of the great rabbis of the Talmud, was bathing in a river. Rabbi Yochanan was considered to be... Rabbi Yochanan and his sister were considered to be the two most beautiful people in all of Israel. They were, like, absolutely stunning, both of them. So Reish Lakish was this, like, incredible... This thief. Like, Reish Lakish... Rabbi Yochanan's bathing in the river. Reish Lakish takes a running leap into the river, right? And he like leaps like half the width of the river and lands right next to Rabbi Yochanan. And he comes up out of the water and he looks right in the face of Rabbi Yochanan, who's the most handsome man he's ever seen. He says, oh my gosh, He says, man, you could have a lot of women. Beauty like yours. Think of how many women you could get. Rav Yochanan looks at him and says, look at your strength. Think of how much Torah you could learn and teach. Reish Lakish looks at him. Rav Yochanan looks at him. And apparently the conversation must be much more than what the Gemara reports. And Rav Yochanan, I mean, there must be more to it than that. Rav Yochanan says, look, my sister is much more beautiful than I am. He says, but I would never, ever consider her, consider suggesting that she go out with some ignoramus like you or a thief like you. And I said, well, I'll learn a bit of Torah. He says, learn a bit. He says, I'll learn a lot of Torah. So he starts learning Torah. Eventually, Reish Lakish becomes a student of Rav Yochanan. Eventually, he becomes a colleague of Rav Yochanan. And eventually, he becomes a rabbi, an independent scholar in his own right. And eventually, he married the sister of Rav Yochanan. And it's an amazing story. But again, the point is, there's a distinction here. There's a discrimination. Men and women are different. So now, linguistically, let's look back at the Mishnah. A man may marry himself, meaning he can do the actual marriage by himself. Why does it say himself? It's obvious. What's the answer? That it's prohibited for him to get married without himself being there. He's got to see her. Now it says, and a woman may get married herself. Obvious. Why does it say that? It's better for her to marry. It's better for her to do the mitzvah herself than through an agent. So now we have adequately resolved the two extra words in the Mishnah, and has told us, these two extra words teach us two ideas. A, it teaches us it's prohibited for a man to get married until he's seen the bride. B, it teaches us that with virtually all the commandments, it's better to do it yourself than through an agent. Now, the next stage, the next level of the Gemara, general, and this is a general structure of the Talmud, the first thing the Talmud will try and do is get rid or explain linguistic difficulties in the Mishnah. That's the first thing we've done, okay? And those linguistic difficulties have expressed two ideas, two halachic ideas. The next thing the Gemara usually does is it looks for the source of the Mishnah. Where does the Mishnah know this from? Where does the Mishnah know that you can do things through a proxy? How do you know there's such an idea as a shliach, as an agent in Jewish law? It's convenient. But how do you know such an idea exists? Where is the source in the Torah for such a thing? That's a good possibility. Abraham sends his servant Eliezer to marry a wife for Yitzchak. Why is that not a good source? Why is that not a source that we can use? A, obviously it was halachically inappropriate. He didn't see her. What else is problematic? Eliezer wasn't Jewish. And you can't appoint a non-Jew as your agent. Okay, what's the third problem? She wasn't Jewish. There was such a thing as technically any Jews then. Why is that? More intrinsic, why is that? The Torah had not been given yet. We're talking about here, Abraham, early Bronze Age. The Torah was not given until the middle Bronze Age interchange period in 1313 BCE. So therefore, we don't have a Torah yet, so you cannot make a deduction about a legal issue in Judaism from that which is done before Sinai. Okay? Therefore, that is not going to be a good source for us. So we have to look somewhere else. We have to look into the Torah. What other sources do we have for agency? Yeah.
Yeah, but we learned Malikat Ish-Isha from the buying Abraham and the land.
Malikat
Ish-Isha. The idea of Kinyan is from Avram.
Well, no, you see, we don't learn it from what Abraham did. Abraham was not marrying a woman. What we learn it is, we clarify the meaning of the word kach from the way it is used in the rest of the Torah. That's a standard, that does not require that it just should be a Torah beforehand, before Sinai. All that requires is the language of the Torah should be consistent. Since the Torah has the one author, God, right, therefore we assume the language to be consistent. And if I find a language used in one place that means one thing, we assume that that's going to define it and it'll be the same the rest of the Torah. That's the idea there. Okay, so now, yes. Well, that's very interesting. It's an idea which is mentioned in the Talmud and the Medrash and the Zohar and many of the commentaries, that the Sinai experience was actually a marriage of God to the Jewish people. What did God give us and said, you are betrothed to me? The tablets of the law. Who is the agent? Moses. But again, That's not a source. That's a very beautiful explanation, and it's true, but that cannot be used as a source for the halacha. So let's look at the Talmud. The Talmud brings a number of sources. Number four. How do we derive the principle of agency? A few areas. For it was taught, you shall also separate tithes. Here it's talking about the Jewish people have to give tithes, a percentage of their crop, a certain percent to the Kohanim, to the priests and the Levites. The Levites have to give to the priests. But it says there's a whole extra verse. I don't have time to read through the whole verse. You don't have to trust me. You can actually look up the verse yourself. But there's a whole extra verse which says, all it says is the following. Also you shall give tithes. And the Talmud says, what does that mean? What does it add by saying also you? So the Talmud says, guess what? There's not one word extra in the Torah. God was not paid by the word. Charles Dickens, Tom Clancy, right, were paid by the word. Right? That's why they're thick novels with lots of extra words and adjectives and stuff like that. But the Bible, God was not paid by the word, right? That means it's absolutely efficient. And therefore, just as when we look at nature, we assume efficiency and uniformity, we look at the Torah, we assume the same thing. And therefore, why does it say also you shall give tithes? The Talmud says, you know what? There's you and there's also you. Who's you? Everyone knows that. Me. Right? Who's also me? That's right, my agent. There's me and there's mini-me. There's myself and there's my... What's the phone? Right? There's myself and there's an agent. There's myself and there's an also myself. Who is the also? My agent. There's other sources which are a little more explicit. It says, an entire community of the congregation of Israel shall slaughter the Paschal Lamb in the afternoon. Everyone know what the Paschal Lamb is? You know, the Egyptians, if you look in the... Biblical Archaeology Review, winter last year, had an article about the ram god Khnum. The ram god Khnum was a god that the Egyptians worshipped. He had the head of a ram and the body of a human being. In Karnak, there is half a kilometre of statues of sheep. The Egyptians used to venerate the sheep. So now, since the Jews were slaves in Egypt for 210 years, we were assimilated in Egyptian idolatry, and we had a slave mentality. What did God tell us to do before we got out of Egypt? Take a lamb that the Egyptians worship, slaughter it, roast it whole on a spit, have a family barbecue, don't break the bones, and eat it. Now, what's the purpose of that? The Zohar says, this is to be, how would you say it in the United States, to get in the face of the Egyptians. Okay? And it's like, you are taking, the Egyptian says, what's that smell? And they look over your fence, and they say, oh my God! And they mean it. Right? And the Jews are eating it. In other words, so what could be more, that's the greatest annulment of idol worship. Right? I'm taking the sheep, I'm making God burgers. So we're doing it. Right? So the Paschal Lamb is eaten, right, in a family group. Today, unfortunately, all we have is a little bone on the Seder plate. You know what I mean? That's our remnant of it. But, you know, the ideal was this, like, I was at a bar mitzvah in Australia once. They had a whole lamb on a spit. It's unbelievable. It's great. Anyway, I tell you what, you know, Australian beer, Australian barbecues, Australian weather. Okay, right. All right, let's go on before I collapse crying. All right, so now, it says this. It says, look carefully. The entire community of the congregation of Israel shall slaughter the Paschal Lamb in the afternoon. Talmud says, what do you mean? Does the entire community slaughter the lamb? Who slaughters the lamb? Correct. Not even the head of each household. Who says it? The Kohen. So really it says the entire community shall slaughter, but we know who did the slaughter? The Kohen. And the Torah says the Kohen did it. And yet the Torah says the entire community shall do it. What does that seem to imply? The Kohen is the agent of the Jewish people. He's the agent of the Jewish people. And that's why, and we see there's quite a few cases where it says that. For instance, when it says that you shall execute a murderer, it says the entire community of Israel shall execute the murderer. Now, how exactly do you have that? 4 million people execute someone. Let's have switches in series. Series are parallel. Right? Series. Everyone has to close their circuit. So, you know, like the... Right? So, but how do you do that? The answer is, the person who is appointed by the court is the agent for the Jewish people in killing this murderer. So we see in the Torah there's an idea of agency. Now, but there are limitations on that. What is a limitation? Number five. Actually, before I get to number five. So, what have we learned so far? We've learned that there are certain commandments you can do through an agent, correct? Like what? Marriage. What else? Ritual slaughter of the Paschal lamb, for example. Well, that's a little different. We'll get that. Tithes. No, what we've seen so far. What we've seen so far. Tithes. What we've seen so far. What have we seen so far? Marriage. Tithes. Paschal lamb. And one more, execution of criminals. Okay? There are other commandments you can do through an agent. The commandments like shofar or prayer is a little different. Why? In prayer, the idea is, if I hear and focus and concentrate on the words and show my agreement, my acquiescence by saying amen, that's as good as if I said it. It's not like he's my agent. Like, if, you know, let's say everyone is obligated to say, God save the Queen every morning. Okay? So I wake up in the morning, I've got a sore throat. So my wife says, God save the Queen. I say, amen! Right? I have expressed that same emotion of loyalty, right, and that same sovereignty by saying that amen as if I would say it myself. So it's not exactly the same as shlichud, therefore I'm going to leave that aside. So there are certain commandments we know you can do. Let me ask you something. What about commandments you cannot do through shlichud? For instance, let's say you hear a lecture about tefillah and you say, that's a cool lecture. Right? It's a cool mitzvah. Right? But, you know, my earliest class in college is 10:30, and it's impossible for me to daven before then, right? It's like so early in the morning, it's like, you know, it's not possible, right? So I'm going to, you know, Rabbi, here's a dollar a day, right? Have me in mind when you put on tefillin. You can be my shliach. Is that okay? No. How about, you don't like matzah. You think it tastes like upholstered cardboard, right? So you get some, you ask some Jew with a big appetite, you say, look, eat a double portion for me. Have me in mind. Can you do that? No. Everyone realizes that's wrong? Right, so how do you know that? How do you know that certain commandments you can do through a proxy, certain commandments you cannot? What's the difference? You were right, by the way. You cannot put tefillin on through a proxy. You cannot eat matzah through a proxy. You cannot sit in the sukkah through a proxy. But you can get married, divorced, shech the Passover offering, give charity, give tithes through a proxy, but you can't do the other things. What do we put in the dialogue box here? What is the algorithm that tells me, well, if I put a mitzvah into this, if this mitzvah you can do through a proxy, this mitzvah you cannot. What's the key? So the answer, yeah. Go ahead.
So one is you have to use your own body. The other one involves changing a status of something which you could appoint someone to do.
Excellent. Excellent. The Ktzot HaChoshen, one of the great commentaries in the Code of Jewish Law, says the following, what you said more or less. He says that a commandment, an agent can do an action for you, but he cannot be you. You understand? He can do an action for you, but he cannot be you. So let's take tefillin for an example. Supposing, God forbid, I hurt my arm, and I cannot put the tefillin on myself. So I tell an agent, look, you be my agent, put the tefillin on my arm. And he does that. Would that be okay? That would be okay. Why? The action of tying on the tefillin, who did it? I did it, through my agent. Where did I put it? On my body. But if I tell the agent, look, put tefillin on your arm for me, I've put the tefillin on the wrong place. It's like putting them on my leg. So he's not my body. He can do things for me, he can act for me, but he cannot be me. So if I have to eat matzah, he could feed me matzah, but he can't be me. It's not a tape, it's a remote control. If I say something offensive, they press it and I get an electric shock. All right, so the idea is that an agent cannot be me, but he can do things for me. Now, one final limitation, and that's where we get Eichmann coming in. Number five, one who sends a minor, a mentally incompetent adult, or a deaf mute with fire to burn someone else's property is exempt in the human court, but is liable in the heavenly court. If you send the fire in the hands of a sane, competent adult, the adult is liable for damages. Let's give the example. Following example, anyone heard of Don Corleone?
Yeah.
The Godfather? You should have come earlier. Right? So now, why didn't you come to me earlier? Sorry. Right? So Don Corleone, let's say he calls in Luigi Bracci. Who's Luigi Bracci? Luca Brazzi. Who's Luca Brazzi? He's the assassin, the hitman. So Don Corleone calls in Luca Brazzi. He says, Luca, he says, I want you to take care of the Tartaglias. Okay? The Tartaglia family. Okay? So now, Luca gets his piano wire with the handles. Right? And he knocks on the door, excuse me, is this a Tartaglia residence? Right? Yeah, and he kills some Tartaglias. Who's the murderer? Who's the murderer? Don Corleone or Luca Brazzi? Lukabratzi. Yep. Why? Why? This is what the Talmud says. Last line of the page. As we say, the words of the rabbi, the words of the student, who do you listen to? It's not a plug. The Talmud says this. Right? You listen to the rabbi. In the same way, Lukabratzi comes to court and says, I killed him only because Don Corleone told me to. What will the court say to him? Don Corleone told you to kill him. God told you not to. Are you sane? Are you competent? Who do you listen to? God or Don Corleone? God. Eichmann came to the court in Israel. What was Eichmann's defense? Following orders. That's not a defense. It is not a defense. I remember when I came, my first day in the Israeli army. So the first thing you do is, they have this, like, you get dental x-rays and blood tests, and they give you injections and stuff like that, and pictures taken. And then, at the end, you have to sign this oath. Right? It's an oath that says, I promise or I affirm that any command given to me by an authorized member of the Israeli Defense Forces, an authorized officer of the Israeli Defense Forces, I will follow bli shum tnai, without any condition whatsoever. So I come into the room, and I say, I can't sign this. The Pekida, the clerk there, she says, what do you mean you can't sign it? Just sign the stupid document. I said, I can't sign it. She said, why not? I said, because I can't say that I'll follow an order without any condition. If the order goes against the Torah, I cannot follow the order. She says, no one's going to tell you to eat pork. What are you, crazy? She said, Martha, I'm a sugar. Right? I said, look. I said, the fact is, whether it will happen or not is irrelevant. I can't sign an oath which is not true. Because I cannot say I'll follow an order without any condition. So she calls over another officer, and he comes and says, Mabo, what's the problem here? So he says he doesn't want to sign. I said, why don't you want to sign? I said, because I can't sign a thing that will say that I'll follow orders without any condition. And he says, this is the army. You can't start arguing with orders. Right? So I say, look. I say, if you were given an order that went against the very depths of your morality, that went against Matzpun, your conscience, would you follow the order? And they both said, no. I said, didn't you sign this oath? Either you signed a false oath or you're going to go against your conscience. So how can you tell me to sign it? So the third guy comes over. It's like, now there's a whole, like there's 500 people in line, right? And we've got this whole Talmudic debate going on. And then one of the guys starts yelling at me, and I say, listen, you're trying to tell me to get into the Israeli army, I have to agree with Eichmann's defense? Eichmann's defense was, I'm following orders. Right? That's not a defense. So they said, okay, so what do you want to write? I said, I want to put an asterisk in and write... And write bitnai on condition that does not contradict the Torah. They said, fine, sign it already. I'm driving them. So I sign it. Anyway, they sent me through afterwards. You know, but the truth is, I asked afterwards a religious officer, how do you sign this? See, so he pointed out to me something I didn't realize, right? But it says in the oath, it says, al pi, according to the founding principles of the state of Israel. Since one of the founding principles of the state of Israel is chofesh dat, umatzpun, which means freedom of religion. He said, it's already a condition in the oath that it doesn't go against your freedom of religion. Mm-hmm. I said, oh, okay, I didn't realize that. They didn't explain it to me. They didn't know it. I had four officers there in the end. Not one of them could tell me this. We're all arguing. I signed the amended version in the end. Who knows what happened? But again, the idea is in Jewish law, we have a principle, ein shliach lidvar aveira, meaning you can't appoint a proxy to do a sin. The person who pulls the trigger, that person's the murderer. I'm not saying Don Corleone is a tzaddik. You know, we don't give him the aliyah in shul. You know, it's not like, you know, Don Corleone is not a righteous person. He's a low life. He's a creep, right, etc. But who's the murderer? Luca's the murderer, right? Not Don Corleone. That's the idea here. And the Talmud says, ancient. So now we have learnt a number of principles. Principle number one, mitzvah bo. First of all, first thing we've learnt is you can get married, kiddushin, through a proxy. Very convenient, should anyone be in the situation. Right, you know, you can get married through a proxy. Second, we've learnt, mitzvah bo yoter mibishucho. It's a mitzvah, every mitzvah you can do through an agent, with the exception of charity. It's better to do it yourself than through the agent. Third principle we learnt. What's the third principle we learnt? A woman does not have to see the man, but... it is better for her to get married with herself than an agent. What about the principle of a man? He has to see her before he gets married. He's not allowed to do it solely through an agent. And then we learn the source. What's the source for agency? Either the Paschal Lamb, tithes, or execution of criminals. Sources for it in the Torah itself. And then we learn two limitations. Two limitations on making a proxy. What's limitation number one? The agent can act for you, but he cannot be you. That's Sota Choshen, as you pointed out, right? Sota Choshen says. And the other limitation we learnt is the agent does the sin, it's his sin, there's no agency for a sin. Because the words of the person who sins and the words of God, who do you listen to? God. That's the basic idea. That's a little piece of Gemara. That's about four lines of the Gemara, right? Without commentaries. I mean, with very minimum commentary, right? For those who want more of this, come to Israel and I give Gemara Shirim all the time. Okay, that's it. Thank you very much.